What we're going to learn tonight is something called a historical narrative and an ode, or what they call a lyric narrative. And that's where you have one of history that's in what they call prose, and then you have one in verse, which is a poem, and the poem will be an ode. And this is concerning Deborah. I'm going to give you kind of a rough outline, and then we'll go into the details. The story begins as Israel had peace for 8 years with Ehud, then he died. Israel turned back to gods and wickedness. Jabin, king of Canaan, ruled for 20 years and mightily oppressed people. Deborah judged Israel, confronted the enemy, and Jael killed the enemy, and two women who really took charge in this particular time frame over the men. Deborah and Barak go to battle. Captain Sisera has 900 iron chariots. Hebert, Jael's husband, is a paid, to the best knowledge, is a paid spy for King Jabin, who informs of Israel's actions. Sisera brings chariots to the plain for the battle. Yahweh sends a downpour, river overflowing plains. The chariots become useless. Sisera hides in the spy Hebert's tent, who there his wife is Jael. Jael kills Sisera, and then they have 40 years of rest. 40 is a number for probation. Then they go on to Gideon. That's how we will be, and there's the rough outline. Concerning the poetry, this is a great quote from a book I'm reading on the literature of the Bible. The Bible is, this is done in 1845 to 1899, so they only have the King James Version, which we'll call the Authorized Version, or the Revised Version.
Of the Bible.
Of the Bible. The King James Version was, they put it into verses where it's verse after verse after verse after verse.
You mean line after line?
Yeah, line after line after line. And what that ended up doing, it breaks off all poetry and all symbolism that our Father has put into words. And so he says, the Bible is the worst printed book in the world. No other monument of ancient or modern literature suffers the fate of being put before us in a form that makes it impossible, without strong effort and considerable training, to take in elements of literary structure, which in all their books are conveyed directly to the eye in a manner impossible to mistake. The Rotherham Bible does that. But the vast majority of those who read the Bible have never shaken off the medieval tendency to look upon it as a collection of isolated sentences, isolated texts, isolated verses. You know, how many times have you ever heard, absent from the body is present with the Lord? Mm-hmm. And you just grab one verse out of context over and over and over. Yeah. Their intent is nothing but reverent, but the effect of their imperfect reading is to degrade a sacred literature into a pious scrapbook. You know what a scrapbook is? You're just taking little sayings and putting it in here. It doesn't tell the story. The true issue between the Authorized and the Revised Version is the question whether the Bible is to be treated as a collection of sayings, each verse an independent whole, or whether the first duty of an interpreter is to associate the text with its context. What answer the theologian will return to the question is not the province of this book to determine. But speaking from the literary point of view, I make bold to say that the reader who confines himself to the Authorized Version or the King James excludes himself from half the beauty of the Bible. And so by missing the poetry and the rhyme and what we're going to see is called parallelism, you're going to miss all that. So we're going to be discussing Deborah, and the song of Deborah and Barak is an ode, and the ode is a poem that is sung in lyrical narrative. And also, this is a story about Jael. Her name is not Jael, it's really Yael, because it's J replaced with a Y. Deborah, we'll probably keep calling her Deborah, but what the correct word is Deborah. That's how the Hebrew pronounced that. And Deborah, or Deborah, means bee, B-E-E, the insect. Sisera means battle array. Yael, or J-L, it means mountain goat. That's what they say. what we're going to find out is some inference. It's not absolutely written, but there's some things we can infer. And what we're going to see is these people were mightily oppressed, and we're going to say in the scriptures they did not use the highways. And so there can be some, you know, some inference that these guys were so brutal that people avoided them for 20 years, and that could be raping women, you know, stealing from people, anything else. And that also might explain why Jael or Yael gets involved in this case, and a little payback on Sisera, on the wickedness. Let's see. Let's stop there. Now we go into Judges, actually in chapter 3. Saddle up. Chapter 3. We're going to give you a little context before we get into chapter 4, which is all about Deborah, or Deborah. Chapter 3, verse 14, this is the period of the judges, and we're going to see, if you have the Rotheram, you're going to see the word Ehu, which he was a judge, and in verse 14 it says, so the sons of Israel served Eglon, king of Moab, 18 years. So they were captive for 18 years, or servants for 18 years. That's how we started off. Now we go to verse 30. And this is where Ehu comes into the plane. Verse 30 and 31. And Moab was subdued on that day under the hand of Israel, and the land had rest 8 years.
80.
Oh, 80 years. Yeah. Oh, that's good. I had 8 years. 80 years, and Ehu judged them until his death. One person said, and it really makes sense, is these leaders did not tolerate idolatry. And so if anybody tried to go into idolatry while they were alive, they took care of matters. And that's the same
judges,
way.
The judges, you mean?
Pardon me?
The judges?
Yeah, the judges. Ehu, what we're going to find out, when these leaders die, things go awry. And that's where Moses said too. He said, I know after my death, you're going to fall into sin. Moses would not allow that to happen. And this particular person, for 80 years, did not allow it to happen. But when he died, we see in chapter 4, verse 1, and the sons of Israel again did the thing that was wicked in the sight of Yahweh when Ehu was dead. So once the leader, and this is so important for leadership, is to actually lead and demand, not just to talk the talk, but you're going to be the bad guy. Okay, come on, Isaiah. Pay attention. So what we'll do is I'm going to be reading quite a bit because we're going to read two chapters, chapter 4 and 5. And let's see here, failure of rulers. Oh, and as we can see, before we begin this, in chapter 5, verse 6 and 7, in the days of Shamgar, son of Athna, in the days of Jael, or Yael, the roads were forsaken, and the frequenters of highways betook them to roundabout paths. There was a failure of what?
Rulers
to in Israel, a failure. And that twice, and that's the poetry we get into. Until I arose, a Deborah, arose a mother in Israel. Leadership, and usually the people don't like it. You know, with Moses, they tried to rebel against Moses constantly to say, let's get rid of this guy and let's go back to Egypt. He had people put to death and everything else to keep the order. It's very important to have righteous leaders. Now, if Wendy, can you read 1 through 10?
Chapter 4?
Yeah, chapter 4. And if you get tired...
And the sons of Israel again did the thing that was wicked in the sight of Yahweh when Ehud was dead. So Yahweh sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. Now the prince of his host was Sisera, and he dwelt in Harosheth of the nations. And the sons of Israel made outcry unto Yahweh, for he had 900 chariots of iron. And he oppressed the sons of Israel heavily 20 years. And Deborah, a woman who was a prophetess, wife of Lapidoth, she was judging Israel at that time. She used to sit, therefore, under the palm tree of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. And the sons of Israel came up to her for justice. And she sent and called for Barak, son of Abinoam, out of Kadesh Naphtali, and said unto him, Hath not Yahweh God of Israel commanded, Come and draw towards Mount Tabor, and bring with thee 10,000 men of the sons of Naphtali, and of the sons of Zebulun, and I will draw unto thee, unto the torrent of Kishon, Sisera, prince of the host of Jabin or Yabin, with his chariots and with his multitude, and will deliver him into thy hand? And Barak said unto her, If thou wilt go with me, then will I go, but if thou wilt not go with me, I will not go. And she said, I will go with thee, only it shall not be to thine own honor that shall arise from the journey which thou art about to take, for into the hand of a woman will Yahweh sell Sisera. So Deborah arose and went out with Barak towards Kadesh, and Barak towards Kadesh, and there went up at his feet 10,000 men, and Deborah went up with him.
So there's the scene. And what we're going to see, this is the historical narrative. The word narrative is somebody who is explaining events. I don't like to use the word story. Story means the same thing, but anymore if you use the word story, it could be fiction. And so this is not fiction. And story doesn't mean fiction, but when people you say, I want to tell you a story, they automatically think of fiction instead of as true events. So this is a historical narrative. Now we're going to be introduced to Jael or Yael's husband. And this is very interesting because his name is Hebert. Verse 11, Now Hebert the Kenite has separated himself from the Kenites, even from the sons of Hobath, father-in-law of Moses. So they were in the wilderness with Moses, because it's related to the father-in-law. And moved his tent as far as the oak of Zanaim, which is near Kadesh. So what we anticipate is, or what we speculate, that this person was a spy. And so Barak is coming down through Kadesh, and he is watching Kadesh through his tent. And what we're going to find out is he ends up informing on the Israelites, who are really his brothers, and tells this information to Sisera and Jabin. And they told Sisera that Barak, son of, and this name is really interesting, Ab-Enoman. So Ab means father. So Ab, and the I is like an E-E, and then Eno-Am. So Ab-Enoman had gone up to Mount Tabor. So Sisera called together all his chariots, 900 chariots of iron, and all the people that were with him, from Harosheth of the nations unto the torrent or the ravine of Kishon. Then said Deborah unto Barak. And this is a great revelation, walking by revelation. So the word Deborah rose up to became the leader. When she got the revelation as a prophetess, and she could tell these people, now it's time to go today. We always have to be on time. We don't want to be early or late, and don't jump until Yahweh tells us to jump. Then said Deborah unto Barak, for this is the day on which Yahweh hath delivered. And remember, who's going to fight this fight?
Yahweh.
All right, but he needs us, and he needs Deborah, and he needs Barak to rally the people. Many times we are in a bad situation because people don't rise up to lead. And so David, did he rise up to lead, Elijah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
And did Samson rise up to lead?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, he did. And they delivered the Israelites because those guys took the call and rose up. Deborah rose up. For this is the day on which Yahweh hath delivered Sisera into thy hand. Hath not Yahweh gone forth before thee? So Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 men after him. And then, Elijah, you want to read 15 through 18?
When you say Deborah's husband was a spy, so he worked for Israel?
No. Jael's husband.
Jael.
Okay, but her...
We're going to find out. Jael, or Yael, is the one who killed Sisera. Well, that's the wife of Hebert, and Hebert was working for Sisera.
So he was, but he was. It sounded like you're saying he was a spy for he worked.
Yael's husband.
But he was a spy working for Israel. For Yahweh.
No, he's not. He's against Israel.
Okay.
He's connected with the Israelites, but he's against Israel. And go ahead, 16 through 19.
Now Barak pursued the chariots and the hosts as far as Harosheth of the nations, and all the host of Sisera fell by the edge of the sword, and there was not left so much as one. Now Sisera had fled on foot into the tent of Jael, wife of Heber the Canaanite, for there was peace between Jabin, king of Hazor, in the house of Heber, the Canaanite.
So I'm going to stop right there, and that's the answer to your question. Why did Sisera go into the tent of Heber? And it says right here, now Sisera had fled on foot unto the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber. Why? Because Heber was working for Sisera. The Kenite, for there was peace between Jabin, king of Hazor, and the house of Heber, the Kenite. So he was the paid spy. And now 18 and 19.
And Jael went out to meet Sisera and said unto him.
His name is Sisera.
Sisera, I mean. Turn aside, my lord, turn aside with me. Do not fear. So he turned aside with her into the tent, and she threw over him a coverlet.
I'll take it over. And he said unto her, let me drink, I pray thee, a little water, for I am thirsty. And so a lot of this, we're going to get the full picture on the poem, the ode that's in the next chapter. So she opened the bottle of milk. It was water, but what did she give him?
Milk.
To drink, and spread over him the coverlet. And he said unto her, stand at the entrance of the tent, and it shall be, if any man come and ask thee. Isn't it amazing? Here's just another illustration. How many of the people were killed by Barak? Let's go back here. 16. Now Barak pursued the chariots and the host as far as Harosheth of the nations, and what? The host of Sisera fell by the mouth of the sword. So in Hebrew, when you see the edge of the sword, it's the actual word mouth, pay. So that's kind of nice as an illustration. The mouth of the sword. There was not left so much as how many?
One.
So nobody's left. Where's their leader?
He's running away.
He's running away.
It's
always that case. They're not the ones who aren't leading like George Washington. You know, in front of the battle lines fighting, you cowards. And it's always those evil cowards that go hide in caves and hide in, you know, whether it's Hitler or Mussolini. So, and they're always under the old bomb shelter. They can kill people easily. And how about, how do we find Saddam Hussein? Where was he?
In a hole.
In a hole in the ground. They call him a spider cage. You know, a little coward running and but so he's hiding out in this tent. And so verse 20, and he said unto her, stand at the entrance of the tent, and it shall be, if any man come and ask thee and say, is there here a man, that thou shalt say, there is not. Then say Jael.
Took Jael.
Or then took Jael, wife of Heber, the tent pen. This is great. And put the mallet in her hand, and went unto him softly, and smote the tent pin into his temples, and it pierced through into the ground. That's a long pin. I mean, that's you know what a tent pin is?
Yeah, like keeps the tent.
Yeah, the tents down.
Yeah,
they live in a tent. It keeps the tents down, and it pierced through into the ground, So he being fast asleep and shrouded in what?
Darkness.
Isn't that symbolic right there? He's shrouded in darkness. And he died. So, Melania, read 22 to 23.
And lo, Barak in pursuit of Sisera. So Jael went forth to meet him and said unto him, come and let me shew thee the man whom thou art seeking. And he came in with her, and lo, Sisera lying dead with the tent pin in his temples.
Then God subdued on the day Jacob, king of
Jabin,
king of Canaan, before the sons of Israel. In the hand of the son of Israel went on waxing more and more heavy upon Jabin, king of Canaan, until they had cut off Jabin, king of Canaan.
All right. Now, keep your finger here. We're going to go to Psalms 83. This is a great analogy when you're looking at the poetry and the word. And Rothram shows all the poetry that's throughout our Father's Word. So in chapter 83, verses 1 through 3.
You mean Psalm 83?
Or Psalm, yeah. Page 573. And Elijah, you want to read 1 through 3?
Of what chapter?
Psalm 83.
Chapter 1 through 3, right?
Yeah, Psalm 83, okay. Verses 1 through 3.
O Elohim, do not keep quiet. Do not hold thy peace, neither be thou still, O Elohim. For lo, thine enemies are tumultuous, and they who hate thee have lifted up the head. Against thy people they craftily devise a secret plot and conspire against thy treasured ones.
Now we go into verse 9 and 10. Watch this. Make them like Midian, like Sisera, like Jabin, by the torrent of Kishon. They perished at Endor. They became what?
Manure
for the soil. That's pretty good, huh? So we go back to chapter 5. And that's really what happened to Jezebel. She got eaten by the dogs. And what happened when dogs eat food? What happens to it when it leaves her body? What's that called?
People step in it.
Poop. And so what did Jezebel become?
Dog poop.
Who stepped in some? That's when you fight Yahweh. Now we're going into the ode or the song of Deborah and Barak. And so this is supposed to be sung. And this is not Deborah, it's also Barak. And so the book I have, you know, it starts explaining things about poetry.
Elijah, we'd like you to sing this, please.
So this is what they call a lyric narrative, the ode. And an ode is a long narrative, a lyric, that soars. The poetic format that Yahweh has throughout his word in Hebrew is called parallelism. And what happens is the sentences are similar in construction. Most people think of poems as rhyming, like, violets are, roses are red, violets are blue. That's a rhyming poem. The other kind is metering, or a meter poem, and everything's five syllables, so it all goes down. But in the Hebrew, this is called parallelism, which we're going to see all the way through his word. To start, there's something called a strophe, and we would call that a stanza. And that is an arrangement, maybe by three or four lines. Then you have antistrophe, which is a reply or response to the strophe. And then you also have the apostrophe. And, you know, we think of apostrophe as a little thing behind a comma, you know, to make something possessive. An apostrophe in poetry is a writer addresses an imaginary character. And so in this particular case, when it becomes an apostrophe, he will address Yahweh. And so the poem begins by proclaiming to people what's happening. And then the people can respond back and give you no insight. So that's a reply or a respond. And then the writer can go off and praise Yahweh. And so we've had three different things that have just happened. And by watching Deborah or Deborah, we will see this come to pass. Chapter 5, verse 1. Then sang Deborah and Barak, so both of them, sons of Ab-Enoman, on that day, saying, "For the leadership of Israel, no, for the leadership of Israel, of leaders is Israel. For the volunteering of the people, bless ye Yah." We're going to get so much more information from this poem on what actually happened in chapter 4, because in chapter 4 it didn't rain. Rain's not even involved. All we know is that Barak was up on a hill. Sisera came in with 900 chariots. Barak comes and beats him up, and Sisera leaves his chariot. Well, what happened to the chariots?
The 9,000.
Yeah, 10,000 people. So what don't we know about? And so in verse 3 we start the prelude. "Hear ye kings, give ear ye princes. I unto Yahweh, I will sing." Do you see the poetry there? Can everybody see that in his writing? "I unto Yahweh, I will sing. Will make melody to Yahweh, Elohim of Israel." Now the apostrophe comes in right now, because she's going to be addressing Yahweh. "O Yahweh," or both of them, "when thou didst come forth out of Seir, when thou didst march along out of the field of Edom, earth trembled, heaven also poured forth, yea, dark clouds poured forth waters." Do you see that structure there? One on top of each other. "From the Sinai in presence of Yahweh, Elohim of Israel." So right there we get the information about rain, things coming out of the heavens. Then we have what they call the desolate rose, a Deborah. A rose, a mother in Israel. They chose gods that were new. And who are we talking about? Obviously, we're talking about Israel when they're going into captivity for 20 years. They war at the gates. Was there a shield to be seen or a spear among 40,000 in Israel? So now we find out you have 40,000 men who are not armed. So what happened here? Now there's a refrain in the poetry. "My heart," and a refrain is something you usually repeat over and over again, like a chorus. "My heart saith, for the governors of Israel, for the volunteers among the people, bless ye Yahweh. Ye that ride on white asses, ye that sit on carpets, and ye that walk unto the road, speak." So a parallelism, you can see ye, ye, ye. That's the poetry. "In the place of the noise of bowmen among the whales, there lodge ye, the righteous acts of Yahweh, the righteous acts of his rule over Israel. Then had come down to the gates the people of Yahweh." And read verse 12, Melania. Alrighty. With feeling.
"Awake, awake, Deborah, awake, awake. Utter words of song. Arise, Barak, and behind fast thy captives, O son of what's that word?
Ab-Enoman.
Ab-Enoam.
And it's not Ab-Ben, because remember, A-B is always what? Father. And so he's father of delight. So we would always say Ab-Enoam. That's good. "Awake, awake, Deborah. Then came down a remnant to the nobles, a people. Yahweh came down with me against the mighty." Who came down? Yeah. So who's doing the fighting? So when we Yahweh came down, Deborah has to instigate it. So whenever we feel that we're alone, if Yahweh has given us commission to do something, Yahweh and Yahushua are going to be doing the fighting, but they need us to go forward. 14, "Out of Ephraim came down they whose root was in Amalek." After thee, Benjamin among the tribes. Out of Mashir had come down governors, and out of Zebulun, such as bear aloft the staff of the marshal. And my princes in Issachar were with Deborah. Yea, Issachar was the support of Barak, and to the veil rested for it at his feet. Among the divisions of Reuben, great were the resolves of the heart. Wherefore abodest thou among the folds, to hear the mocking of the flocks? The division of Reuben had great counseling of heart. Gilead, beyond the Jordan, took his rest. But Dan, wherefore remained he with the ships? Asher abode by the shore of the seas, and by his creeks must needs rest. Zebulun, a people that scorned their souls unto death, and Naphtali, unto the height of the field. Now we get into what they call the strophe, and this is the battle. On came kings, they fought. Then fought the kings of Megiddo. Plunder of silver they took not away. Isn't that great? And this is poetry, where all of a sudden it says, it directs you in opposite direction. From heaven, and this is the anti-strophe, from heaven was the battle fought. The stars in their course fought against Sisera, which obviously now we're going to be looking about the rain, the story about rain. The torrent of Kishon swept them away. So that had to be a flood, and so we had a big rain that came on that particular day, and the chariots are on the plains, and it sweeps them off into a river. And that's where we know chariots become useless if you have a downpour.
Especially
iron. Iron, they can't go anywhere. Let's see here. 21, the torrent of Kishon swept them away. The torrent of olden times, the torrent of Kishon. Let my soul march along with victorious strength. And this is what they call the strophe. Let my soul march along, beginning of the strophe, with the victorious strength. Then stamped hooves of horses with the galloping of his mighty steeds. Now we get into anti-strophe. Curse you, and that word is pronounced maroz. Curse you, maroz, saith the messenger of Yahweh. Curse you with a curse, the inhabitants thereof. And why they believe this is the city that did not come out and fight. Because they came not into the help of Yahweh, to the help of Yahweh against the mighty. Well, look at that. He said into the help of Barak. They didn't say coming to the help of Barak. They said coming to the help of who?
Yahweh.
Now we're going to see the contrast. We had that was an anti-strophe. Now we're going to strophe because now we're going to see one was cursed. Now what is the next sentence going to be in 24?
Blessed.
Blessed above women shall be Yael, wife of Heber the Kenite. So you get to see this. Yael, she's the wife of Heber. Above women in the tent be blessed. Watch this, Elijah. What's 25 say?
Water he asked, milk she gave. In the bowl for nobles presented cream.
Okay, stop there. So there had to be some significance of making him go
symbolism.
To sleep or whatever. Water he asked, milk she gave. And in a bowl for nobles presented cream, which means he was not threatened, and so he was a royal host inside their tent, so he had nothing to fear, and I give him the best china when I give him this. But what's she going to do?
Kill him.
She's going to kill him. That's correct. The setup. Her hand, now this is great. Yeah, you just wonder, somebody who's so wicked, and has been so wicked against women or their family members or anything else, and then Yahweh can rise this woman up. Her hand to the tent peg put she forth. And so, what hand is that?
Left.
Because right here it says, and her right hand to the toiler's mallet. And so instead of saying mallet, we say the toiler's mallet. Then smote she Sisera. She shattered his head. Yea, She split open and pierced through his temples. Pretty descriptive.
Yeah.
And this is a poem. Well, this is great. Now watch this. And I think this is very symbolic also. The submission that they had, people bowing at their feet. You know, you could probably rape women and then have them bow at your feet when you walk by. Or you steal from people and you have them bow at your feet after you walk by and stole things from them. Now look what happens, what's going to happen to Sisera. Between her feet, he bowed. He fell. He lay. Isn't that great? Now you're going to say it again. Between her feet, he bowed. He fell. Where he bowed, there he fell. What?
Destroyed.
Destroyed. Yeah, isn't that beautiful? I mean, this is a great poem. Now we go into anti-strophe, because now it's, who are we going to hear from?
Yeah.
Sisera's mother. It's going to say, where's Sisera? So we're changing. To the window, looked out, and shrilly cried, the mother of Sisera, through the lattice, why is his chariot ashamed to come? Why delay the wheels of his chariot? The wise ladies, her princesses, responded, nay, she returned answer to herself, is it not they keep finding, dividing, spoil? Oh, they're having a good old time killing people, grabbing their goods, they're going to bring them all back to us. One damsel, two damsels to every hero. You're taking women as your spoil. Spoil of diverse color raiments for Sisera. Spoil of diverse color raiments embroidered. Colored raiments richly embroidered on the necks of them who are laid and are taken as spoil. So that was the people they were underneath. And here we go in the apostrophe. And the apostrophe is, now we go speak to Yahweh. So perish all thy enemies, O Yahweh. But be they who love him, and she going forth of the sun in his might. And the land had rest 40 years because of three people. And who are they?
Barak and Tipple.
Now look at the kids. Who are the three people? They're responsible for 40 years of rest.
Jael, Barak, and Deborah.
That's right. Deborah. Okay. Now, if anybody ever wants to get into that study, this came out of that book. So if anybody's interested in taking that home and reading more in detail, there's some great stuff on it. Now, we'll go ahead and close out. And according to 1 Corinthians 14, we'll go ahead and have a prophecy for the people who are watching or for the people who are listening in the future. But Father, we thank you so much for life that's more abundant, for these great messages of righteousness prevailing. We thank you for the people who are standing up today, the men and the women who are taking the leadership role in order that you can go before them and fight their fights. So we thank you for these words. Thank you, Christ. And through Christ, we come to you. Amen. As you put on my word as a mantle, and wrap yourself in it, put it on and speak forth my word, because in my words are words of deliverance. They are words of peace and of comfort. My words will set you free as you embed them into your mind, into your thoughts, as you meditate upon these and dwell upon all the promises that I put inside my word. Meditate upon those promises of the new earth, of the blessings of this earth, and meditate that this world is not all there is. This is just a staging place for the new heaven and new earth. So at all times, keep that in mind, but keep a smile on your face in order that you may be magnified and manifesting my love, my deliverance that I have brought into your lives, because as I delivered Israel from the wickedness, I have delivered each and every one of you from the sins of your flesh and for the people around you.